Perek Test Mission Yud Base until Perek Yud Mission Base. Echotzchai Odom, whether the wages of a person who works for you, Echotzchai Behema, or the wages of an animal who's working for you, meaning you would pay the money to the animal's owner, Echotzchai Kalim, or the money you pay someone who lent you or who rented out to you things to use. So anything you hire, anyone you hire, Yeshbe Mishum Biyomitin Tzchoro, the mitzvah of paying wages on that day, which the Torah says that applies to them. And we said in the previous Mishnah that that means that if the worker finishes work either at the end of the night or in the middle of the day, so for the rest of that day, employer has the time to pay him, and if he doesn't pay him by then, he transgresses this aver. And the other thing which the Torah says, which is that one can't keep the wages of his worker until the morning, that also applies to all of these wages. And again, we said in the previous mission that applies to someone who works during the day and ends at the end of the day, or he works for just a few hours in the night, and we said that the employer must pay him by the end of the night. And now the Mishnah is going to limit all we've said about paying wages on time, the fact that you've only got a couple of hours to do it. Says the Mishnah, Amosai, when is all of this? That's only Bizman Shetavo'o, when the worker claimed his wages, when he asked the employer for his wages. So then the employer only has the rest of the day, or the rest of the night. However, Loitavo'o, if he didn't even ask for his wages, then Ein Over Alov, the employer does not transgress the Zaveira if he leaves the wages over for the next day. In fact, the Gemara says, even if the employee asks the employer for his wages, but the employer doesn't have money on him at the moment, even then, the employer would not have transgressed the Aveira if he doesn't pay him on time, because that is not considered as having asked him properly, because he couldn't have paid him then. What happens if the employer gave over the debt, the wages which he has to pay, to a shopkeeper, meaning he arranged with the shopkeeper that the shopkeeper should give this person his wages, in food perhaps, and the employer will pay the shopkeeper another time, they've got whatever arrangement they have, or he does the same arrangement with a money changer, he tells the money changer to give this person his wages, and then the employer will have a certain arrangement with a money changer. In that situation, even if the employee has not yet collected his money from the money changer or the shopkeeper, in overall of the employer does not transgress the Aveira, because he is organized for the person to get his wages in another way, and he's sort of given over the responsibility to someone else. Now, in almost all scenarios, when one is required to make a shavua, an oath, from the Torah, the oath is there in order to exempt you from paying something. For example, in a case where we had it earlier on in the Masechta, where someone admits to part of a claim, Moide b'miktzas, if, for example, Reuven goes up to Shimon and says, Shimon, you have 100 zuz of mine. And Shimon says, you know what, I agree, I have 20 zuz of yours. Because he admitted to part of the claim, he has to swear that he doesn't owe the rest of it. And if he swears, then he is now exempt from paying the rest. However, in the following scenario, we're going to have a case where you make an oath in order to receive money. Not to exempt you from paying money, but to receive money. Socher, a hired worker, bizmanoi, in his time, meaning during the time that he can usually claim his wages. For example, if the employer has the whole night to give him the wages, and it's still night, and the employer claims that he has already paid him. But the worker says, no, you haven't paid me. The halacha is, instead of what we would usually do, which is make the employer swear that he's paid him, and then he'd be exempt, here we say, nishpa v'noitel. The worker can swear and then take the money. And the reason for this is that the chachom decided this should be the case, because the employer is very busy with all his business, and he can't really keep track of everything, and who he's paid, who he hasn't paid, and therefore it would be very easy for him to get mixed up and think he's paid him even when he hasn't. On the other hand, the worker definitely knows whether he's been paid or not. It's just a question of whether he's lying or not. And therefore, if he swears that he hasn't been paid, we believe him and he can receive his payment. However, that's only in a case where it's still the night or it's still the day where he would normally receive his payment. However, Obazmano, if that time has passed, which would mean that if he's telling the truth that the owner has not paid him, that would mean that the owner, the employer, has transgressed the Aveira of leaving over the wages. We don't suspect him of doing that. We might be worried or get confused whether he's paid or not, but we do not suspect him of transgressing the Aveira of leaving over the wages, and therefore in an initial venotel, the worker can't just swear and take the money because the employer is not suspected of transgressing the aveira of leaving over the wages. However, even in that scenario, if there are witnesses that the worker asked the employer for his wages before the night ended, when the employer would normally give him his wages, and the employer said, not right now, I'll pay you later. If he said that in front of witnesses, and witnesses come and say that that happened, in that case, even after that day, the worker can swear and take the money, because in that case, it's clear that the owner has left it past that day, and therefore if the worker swears that he hasn't received it, he can take the payment. The truth is, the Gemara explains, this is only on the following 12 hours. Meaning, if let's say, he should have received his wages during the night, and there are witnesses that say that he asked the employer for his wages at night, then the worker has the whole of the next day to swear and collect his payment. But if he leaves it past then it's too late, even if he swears. Says the Mishnah, Ger Toshav. Ger Toshav is a non-Jew who lives in Eretz Yisrael, who keeps the Shel Mitzvah B'nei Noach, the seven mitzvahs for the non-Jews, and there are certain scenarios in which they are treated like Jews, as opposed to being treated like non-Jews. For example, Yesh B'mishrim B'yom Mitzvah Tzchoro, the mitzvah upon the employer to pay his worker on the day, which we said applies if the worker ended at the end of the night, or the middle of the day, that applies to a Ger Toshav as well. If the worker is a Ger Toshav, the employer has to pay him on that day. The Torah explicitly says that this applies to a Ger Toshav as well. However, the prohibition against leaving the wages until the morning, meaning that you've got to pay it at night, which we said applies to a worker who ended the work at the end of the day or the middle of the night, that does not apply to a Ger Toshav, because the Torah there, the Pasuk, begins by talking about Re'acha, your friend, which we interpret to mean only your fellow Jews. And therefore, if this is a worker who is normally paid during the night, if the employer does not pay him on time, he would not transgress the Avera of leaving over the wages. Mishnah Yud Gimel. This Mishnah is a sort of standalone Mishnah, which discusses its own subject in its own right. And that is the subject of taking a deposit or taking an object from someone who owes you money. And the standard case would be if someone lends someone else money and the borrower can't pay back. The lender is allowed to go and take something of his and keep it until that person pays him. Now, there are a number of restrictions when it comes to this, which the Torah describes, and the Mishnah will basically list them and elaborate on those laws. Hamar is Chaveiro, one who lends his friend and his friend cannot pay back when it comes to the deadline. Lo yimashkenu elo beis din. Rule number one, he can only take the mashkoim, which is the object he's going to take for the meantime. He can only take it with Beis Din's permission and via a messenger appointed by the Beis Din. Now, the truth is, if the borrower allows the lender to take it, then he doesn't need someone from the Beis Din. It's only if the borrower does not want to give it to him, then the lender can't force him to give it to him himself. He has to go to Beis Din, and Beis Din will send someone else to force the borrower to give him a mashkoim. Rule number two, and this applies even to a messenger of the Beis Din, you can't enter the borrower's house in order to take the object. The borrower has to give it to you outside. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, b'chutz ta'amid, you have to stand outside and allow the borrower to go and take it out and give it to you. Rule number three. If the borrower had two different utensils, meaning that as the mashkoin, let's say you lent him 100 zuz, and he gives you a mashkoin, but instead of giving you one object which is worth 100 zuz, he gives you two things, one is worth 60 zuz, one is worth 40 zuz, for example. In that case, you're not allowed to keep both of them at the same time. Rather, notel echad, you take one, umaniach echad, and you leave one with him. This applies in a case where the borrower needs it. For example, umachzer sakar balayla, you would return a pillow, if that's what he gave you as the mashkoin, you return the pillow at night, because that's when he needs it, v'shamacharisha, and the thing they would use to plow a field, by yom he would have to return that at the beginning of the day so that the borrower could use that because he needs it. Rule number four, v'imeis. If the borrower dies, then einu machzir l'yorshav, the lender does not need to return the mashkoin to the inheritors of the borrower and allow them to give him money instead of the object. Rather, he can keep the object and that's his payment. And the reason for this is because we look at it as if the lender acquires the mashkoin when he takes it from the borrower. So even though sometimes he gives it back at the day, sometimes at the night, when he gives it back to the borrower, we still in a way look at it as if the lender owns it until the borrower can pay for it. Pay for the loan and then get his objects back. And therefore, since he owns it, if the borrower dies and he doesn't need to return it to the borrower, he also does not need to give it back to the inheritors. And also this is learned from the Pasuk, which says, Hoshev Toshiv Lo. You have to return it to him, which we learned to teach us. We're going to give back to him specifically, but not to the inheritors. After Atzma, even to the borrower himself, he only needs to give it back each day and each night for up to 30 days. But from 30 days onwards, if he still hasn't paid him for the loan, then Mochem Beis Din, you are allowed to go take these objects to Beis Din and sell them and get their value, and that will be your payment for the loan. Now, when the Torah talks about taking a mashkoin, it specifies one type of person and says that it's forbidden to take a mashkoin from her, and that is an almana, a widow, perhaps because she's in an unfortunate situation. But anyway, the Torah says that you can't, and therefore, almana, bein she ani or bein she ashira, whether she's poor or even if she's rich, she's wealthy, so maybe she's not having such an unfortunate time. Nevertheless, the Torah says you cannot take a mashkoin from her, ein mashkoin, so you cannot take a mashkoin from her if she is a widow, which never has the pasuk says. And you cannot take the garment of a widow as a mashkoin. Another thing which the Torah says you can't take as a mashkoin is a millstone, where they would grind things. And really, this is an example of something which is used to prepare food. It doesn't mean specifically this, as the Mishnah will tell us. But firstly, one who takes a millstone as a mashkoin over b'leisaseh, he transgresses a sin. He's also chayv two separate averus for both parts of the millstone. And as the pasuk says, you can't take a rechaim or a rechev as a mashkin. The rechayim is the bottom stone of the millstone. The rechev is the top stone. And the fact that the Torah specified both parts shows that if you do take them, or take the whole millstone together, you transgress two averus because of the two parts. And the Mishnah explains, v'lo rechayim v'rechev v'vadomru. The Chachom didn't say that one transgresses two averus for taking a millstone specifically, rather el kol davar she'yesh mina eichal nefesh. Anything which is used in the process of making food, even if that thing happens to only be one part, you transgress two different averus. You know, as the pasuk says, ki nefesh u'chovel, because he is, as it were, taking the soul, taking the life as a mashkon by taking something which is used for food. It's like he's taking the life of the person as a mashkon, and we see from there that really anything used for food has the same status as a millstone, and therefore you're chayv two averus for that. Perek Yud. Very interestingly, the focus of this perek is very much similar to the focus of the next Masechta Bava Basra. And this is a sort of transition from Bava Metzia to Bava Basra. And if you recall, we mentioned at the beginning of Bava Kama that these three Masechtas, Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, were originally one big Masechta made up of 30 Prokim. So that could explain this. But be that as it may, the subject is basically shared property, or different property, but what is considered one person's, what is considered the other person's, as we will see. Says Mishnah Abayis, Valiyosh Al Shnaim, a house and an upper story, so basically the first floor and the second floor, which belong to two different people. One person lives in the bottom, one person lives at the top. Shenoflu. Both floors fell down. They collapsed. And now you've got this big pile of rubble, and you're not sure which parts came from the top floor, which parts came from the bottom floor. So who owns everything? There's the Mishnah Shneim Cholkem. They split it between them. But Eitzim, when it comes to the wood, or Avonim, when it comes to the stones, but Ofar, they split the earth as well. And this means, for example, if, let's say, both stories were the same size, then they would obviously split it equally. But if, let's say, one was double the size of the other, then he would get double the amount of wood and stones and earth. Now, in this case, which we just described, the house fell down in a way that it's impossible to tell either how it fell down or which part of the rubble is whose. However, many falls of the house, for example, if it just sinks into the ground or something, collapses downwards, then you can see which stones belong to who. Because the bottom stones obviously belong to the bottom story, and the top ones will belong to the top. Now, if you think about it, in that example I just gave, which story is likely to be more broken up? The bottom one, obviously, because that collapsed much more, and there's things weighing down on it. So, v'roim elu avon ha'ruzlish taber. We can look at which stones are more fitting and more likely to be broken. So in the example I just gave, it'll be the bottom ones. In other examples, it might be the ones on the side. Whichever ones are more likely to be broken, you can assume that that belongs to that person. So in our example, you assume that the broken stones belong to the bottom story and the whole ones belong to the top story, and then they take it like that. Finally, if one of the two people recognized some of the whole stones which haven't been broken, and he claims that they're his, says Mishnah, he can take them and they count as part of his final amount that he can take, and that is considered part of his share. Now the Gemara explains, obviously you can't just believe him that he says, oh, that whole one is mine, but rather we're talking about a case, and we've had this before, moide b'miktzos, where someone admits to part of a claim. Meaning, in our case, let's say you've got Reuven and Shimon. Reuven says that he recognized some of those are his. And Shimon says, you know what? You're right, that one is yours, but I'm not sure about the rest. In that case, it's as if Shimon has admitted to part of the claim, which would mean that he has to swear about the rest of the claim, but the rest of the claim is false. But he doesn't know about the rest of the claim, because he doesn't know about the rest of them. Because he doesn't know, he's got to, as it were, pay Reuven those stones which Reuven claims are his, which means that Reuven can take the rest of those as well, since Shimon admitted to part of them being Reuven's. This of course means that if Shimon has no idea about any of them, then Reuven would not be able to take it. Mishnah Beis Habayis V'Aliyos Shel Shnayim, a house or the first floor, and the second floor belong to two people. The truth is, we're talking about a case where the person who lives in the bottom floor owns both floors, but he rents out the top floor. And then, while someone's living in the top floor, nivchaso aliyah, the top floor falls in, meaning part of the floor of the top floor, which is also the roof of the bottom floor, is broken, so the person can't really live in the top floor. In such case, obviously the person who lives in the bottom floor and who owns the entire house has to fix that floor, so that the person who is renting it can live there. However, in our case, the owner of the house does not want to fix it. The person living in the top floor, or renting the top floor, can go down and live downstairs in the owner's floor, actually, until the owner fixes the floor of the top floor. Now, the Gemara explains this is only in a case where the arrangement of the rental was that the maskir, who is the person renting it out, said that he's renting him this top floor, which is on top of the bottom floor. Because he included the bottom floor as part of the rental, even though he's not renting that out, he specifically specified that the top floor is sort of part of the bottom floor's house. Because of that, in a case where he can't live in the top floor, he can now come and live in the bottom floor. But if that was not the case, then he would not be able to live there. Rabbi Yossi argues on a slight point. He holds that whereas hatachto nosin satikra, the person living in the bottom floor, i.e. the owner, has to provide the roof of his floor, that's the bottom part of it. However, the person renting it, the person who is now living in the top floor, has to give the plaster on top of the roof or the floor, whatever you want to call it. Because according to Rabbi Yossi, the plaster is not to strengthen the roof, rather it's just to make the top smooth so that it's a nice floor, and therefore it's the benefit of the person living at the top, and therefore he is the one who has to build it.